Hello, welcome back to the podcast. My name is James Wu, founder and CEO of Munja. Today we have Vincent Ney, president and CEO of Expansion Capital Group, and we are excited to talk about the services that ECG provides. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James. Appreciate you hosting.
Great. Well, Vincent, to get us kicked off, would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and the company's history?
Sure, be happy to. So I am from Texas. I was born and raised in a little small town in South Texas in a farm and ranch and agriculture environment. I attended school and high school there and ultimately received a degree from Texas A&M University in accounting with some emphasis in finance, was involved in the public accounting sector with Pete Mark and Mitchell on the audit side and subsequently Ernst & Winnie on the tax side for about 5 or 6 years of my earliest career. And I then became a small business owner myself through a few different iterations and ultimately got involved in the non-bank lending in 2003 that was originally exclusively consumer-based, and subsequently sold off those companies and the intellectual property and the portfolios, and been an early investor in a B2B MCA company, that being Expansion Capital Group, and became its CEO about 4 years ago.
That's terrific. So today, how many loans have you, how many loans and financing have you funded through ECG?
Great question. Always think of it in terms of dollars funded. We've funded 350 plus million, and let's just take a quick gander here and come up with a more specific number there. Looks like about 11,000.
Wow, that's fairly impressive within this time frame.
You know, we are not by design exclusively internet because we do have a office footprint in our headquarters and our entire operation, with the exception of some staff extended across the country for either biz dev or some specialty aspects. The staff is all here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and we have actually had a couple of groups that we have funded in and around our office. I actually think two of them have set foot in, but for the most part, it's internet driven, and that certainly gives you, you know, some abilities to, you know, exponentially impact the marketplace as opposed to dealing with walk-in traffic. And I know, James, you are in the sector to some degree, so you understand the ability to scale and accomplish greater numbers, you know, through that scale over the internet.
Absolutely, the scalability is pretty important. And speaking of which, you know, from scalability perspective, obviously there's the capital aspect too. So do you fund the financing through your balance sheet? Do you work with investors? How does that work? How does the capital stack work?
We are a balance sheet lender at this point. We began the company predominantly through equity from the founding shareholders, myself being one of them, and raised our initial credit facility to a large degree on what I would call a family office, friends and family type Rolodex request, and then went from there to institutional capital, which we have continued with a couple of different credit facilities. At this point, we don't sell any of our balance sheet debt to third party. We don't, at this point, have not done any syndications. I don't know that I'd completely rule that out, although as long as we're able to find credit facilities that are, you know, cost effective to us to be able to arbitrage off of, I suspect we'll be on this path for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as long as you find the quality companies to fund and you're able to manage the capital stack pretty well, that sounds like a pretty good strategy. And then I know a lot of other participants in the MCA market has done similar things. So maybe let's talk a little bit about MCA, because this is certainly a category that has grown quite a bit in the past few years compared to traditional business lending. So, you know, how do you think about MCA and what gap do you think it bridges in the market for small business funding?
Well, I think MCA at its core and maybe at its earliest origins was a method to quantify and to some degree mitigate some of the risk in underwriting that a more traditional contract negotiated loan might have have required, and also, you know, in the United States where we have state-based governance covering a number of the financial regulatory aspects, you have a tremendous patchwork of rules and regulations that the MCA product tends to find more consistent at this point across those states.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I think certainly there's the regulatory angle, but as well as the angle that with MCA you are able to get the funding in place structurally, you do it more quickly without some of the same regulatory hurdles associated.
Correct, because you're essentially not loaning money at that point. You are taking a vested interest in the receipts of the enterprise, and to some degree, hedging that they will perform looking forward as they have historically, and you take a risk along with the operations, and therefore you become a bit of a shared risk with the operator in hopes that you run out positively. I mean, it's kind of sort of a little bit of an equity play if you really boil it down. I mean, because if the business doesn't do well and doesn't meet their numbers against your forward flow, I mean, you go at risk much like an equity party does.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that said, I think this allows you to fund businesses that probably don't fit as well in the traditional loan model. So I think everybody wins.
Exactly. So, and in the small business sector, obviously they come in every shape, size, you know, creed, color, across a lot of SIC codes and a lot of different marketplaces. And, you know, candidly, they're not all created equal from a bookkeeping standpoint. They're not all created equal from a reporting standpoint. And, you know, one of the things that the MCA product does is it mitigates some of that risk and documentation because you're focusing almost entirely on a revenue stream that generally has at least some aspect of it also being kept by a third party.
Got it. So with that said, and I like to ask this, you know, what's the most exciting or interesting or surprising business that you funded? Give me an example of something that you wouldn't think is in your target market, but you ended up funding.
Well, one that we talked about for a number of, I guess, months, really, maybe it even bled over to years, is so we had a guy call us from the beach in California that was running a food truck selling lobster rolls that he was flying in twice a week from Boston, which is where he was born and raised. And he was having challenges meeting his cash needs, getting the lobsters in time, because he was on a COD program. And we kind of became maybe a poster child for him and him for us. It was interesting. You know, he invited us out. We actually even had one of our guys that was out on a biz dev call on the West Coast go buy the truck and enjoy a lobster roll. So that one, I think, was novel. You know, number one, he's selling a product kind of out of market, starved for enough cash to sustain, and has a going concern that's working well. And probably a second one that, I don't know, we thought was kind of intriguing, maybe the driving point was, you know, we funded a business that had been in existence for 50 years. Most of the time these businesses are, you know, earlier in their life cycle. This happened to have been a wedding catering and special events company that a husband and wife had bought. They'd owned it for about 3 years. The company had been in existence for 50 years, and they managed to land a serious contract and needed essentially capital to get a number of the elements that would be deliverables, and they didn't have the ability to accomplish it through banking, both timing and supporting documentation. And we were able to accomplish it for them. And, you know, they made a big presentation to us about the success of the event. And so that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I think both of these examples kind of speak to the business model in a way that's unique about MCA, right? It's both of these borrowers, both of these businesses probably don't have much collateral and don't have a lot of the characteristics that work really well for a traditional loan, but at the same time, obviously they do need working capital. So
correct.
It seems like there's a good fit. So would you I guess maybe to put in a nutshell or to summarize it, what would you say are the advantages of getting business funding through through you guys specifically and MCA in general compared to other avenues of getting funding?
I think I look to the feedback that we get from the parties that we're funding. And, you know, overwhelmingly, the factors that they talk about are what's the realistic chance of being funded and what's the timing to being funded and collateralization. I mean, those are generally the three big things. I know the world and the regulatory world seems to always want to focus on the cost factor. The small business owner places cost considerably further down their list of concerns. Now, I believe that you could define that as relative cost, i.e., you know, if you're running short on gas, is the price is, you know, big a concern to you? If you don't know if there's another station for 50 miles, then if you have half a tank and you know that there's an abundance of stations over the next hour's worth of drive time. And I think oftentimes a small business is confronted with the fact that the next gas might be 50 miles.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that gap there and the opportunity that you're helping fulfill is probably what's driving a lot of interest in this space, particularly with some of the newer players coming on scene. Some of them are pure internet-based. A lot of them like to use the label fintech. What do you think about the new funders or lenders and how, you know, what they've done and how has that changed the industry?
I mean, I guess I don't know when we begin to define, you know, the new funders or the new lenders. Probably we fit somewhere in that category. I don't know if we're one of the oldest of the new or if we're, you know, mid-level in the new. The MCA product's been around for, I've heard various timelines, but 20 to 30 years. I mean, it's been around for a bit. The proliferation, if that's accurate, of kind of the non-bank small business lenders, MCA funders, you know, it seems like it gained a lot of traction in the last maybe 5 to 7 years, maybe 8 to 10, but somewhere in that window. What have you seen? I mean, you know, I think you've seen speed and decisioning for the party seeking funds, you know, has been reduced tremendously. And I say that inside, you know, of the, if we're going to label this fintech, inside of the fintech world, it has actually gained tremendous speed and reduced time frames, maybe equal to what it accomplished against traditional banks, for example. So you've seen an exponential effect. Okay, you got speed picked up by the kind of the fintech genre against traditional banks, and then I think you had, you know, competition driving speed inside of the fintech world. What else?
Sure.
Collateralization. I think, you know, maybe in some cases the regulatory environment, you know, maybe they're accurate. Maybe the pendulum's swung or beginning to swing too far, and collateralization, you know, might need to be revisited. But nonetheless, the collateralization aspect that has historically been required has been reduced tremendously. I think the chance of any given small business seeking funds actually being funded has increased fairly dramatically. I don't know that anybody has those stats. I know that the Federal Reserve attempts to gather those stats. I don't know that they have a clearinghouse. Obviously, they know what's going on in the banking sector. They know what's going on in the SBA sector. And certainly there are data points out there that you can extrapolate from. And what do we know? We know that there's a lot more businesses being funded today than there were, you know, 15 or 20 years ago.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I was speaking at a conference with regulators. And there's a lot of emphasis and a lot of interest on just how much credit access has been improved and the improvement in speed as well. So that's obviously a big factor that everyone cares about. Now, you can't talk about speed without talking about technology. So tell me about how you guys use technology behind the scenes to fund, to underwrite within your process.
So having, you know, been in the consumer side since 2003, and we were, along with a group of, I don't know, half a dozen consumer lenders that were kind of first to market on kind of a full online deployment where, you know, application to funding was all accomplished online. Obviously, we've seen, you know, most of that transcend traditional banks and everything at this point. A lot of what, you know, was accomplished or attempted to be accomplished from an algorithmic learning and parsing of data, gathering of data, we've attempted to, you know, to transfer over or to make very prevalent in our small business lending and MCA funding as well. I think, you know, what are the common denominators? You know, data gathering, third-party data acquisition, you know, monetization of existing and historical loan files for decisioning. You know, certainly it allows for the ability to parse through massive amounts of data that you wouldn't have been able to do efficiently in any kind of manual form. It probably drives the ability to make decisions that you might not otherwise be able to make. I don't think that the small business sector at large has even a 30-40% penetration of aggregated data that you see on the consumer side. It doesn't lend itself to be as efficient from data modeling, in my opinion, as consumer.
Certainly, yes.
I think there's some gains being made, but they're pretty slow. And there are certain aspects of the small business sector that I wonder if they'll ever be automated. Now, maybe we'll find some surrogate data to, you know, use as a proxy, but I'm not sure. I mean, without the ability to have a small business give you their revenue receipts through some kind of bank or bank verification and, you know, tax returns, since the U.S. Treasury won't allow you to garner that information easily or timely, even with the approval of the rightful owners, you know, it makes that very challenging. So I think the answer is, you know, how much fintech is in fintech in small business? You know, probably half, maybe three quarters, depending on funding size.
I think that's right, and I certainly agree with your point that there are aspects in small business funding that's just fundamentally different compared to consumer funding and lending, and some of it probably won't be able to automate in the foreseeable future. I mean, look at the lobster roll, lobster roll truck. You know, how do you quantify the market of the lobster roll and have an AI actually understand that? That's
exactly
probably a pretty challenging problem. Yeah. Well, at the same time, I think in the back end, once you know what you are looking for, what data points you're looking for, there's certainly a lot that automation and AI is able to help you gather the data and streamline the process. So it sounds like some of that is being done.
I don't think there's any question some of that's being done, and I would theorize that there are probably third-party, you know, we can just, even though I'm not sure it's the appropriate moniker, we'll call them credit bureaus, data bureaus. I'm of the opinion that, you know, they're both consumer and non-consumer credit bureaus, data sources that are looking to attempt assimilation of small business data.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So let's switch gears and kind of look ahead. In the last couple of weeks, there has been some headlines about the risk of a recession. And of course, you know, economists forecast, 13 out of the last three recessions. So nobody really knows when recession is coming. But, you know, how do you think about that? How do you think about the risk of recession and how it impacts small business funding in general and for your business?
You know, in general, the only thing I know with any certainty is that we'll have another recession. I have no idea when.
Right, yes.
So I guess the answer is, you know, you plan for a rainy day, but you make sure your umbrella's got a long life of material on it, because I don't know. You know, I feel like the talking heads have tried their best to put us into a verbal recession, and they didn't get it done.
Sure.
Okay. Are we going to, you know, have a bona fide recession? Or are we going to see a trough? You know, once again, I think there are a lot of pundits that just can't get over the fact that we're not having one. I think some of it's politically motivated. I think that, you know, when you look at the, you know, underlying factors, consumer strength, for example, spending strength, you know, it's still there. But, you know, I think you'd be foolish not to expect that we're going to see some softness or likely going to have another recession. And trying to predict when is probably only less challenging than trying to predict how long it will last. So what do? You know, we try to do meaningful and thoughtful underwriting, expecting that if we moved into a full-fledged recession that, you know, we'd see some softness in our book. We've done some stress testing that, you know, shows that softness, you know, increasing our default rate anywhere from 15% to 40%. There's very limited operational data from folks that were in the small business MCA or lending or funding world in the 2008-2009 trough. what
yeah.
limited aspects are there seem to fall in kind of in that range, an increase of default anywhere from 10 to 30%. There's some outliers that, you know, don't make sense, and so don't give them as much credence. But that's kind of the way we approach it. What happens to us if we have to, you know, weather an increase in our default of, you know, 25%? Well, I mean, it's not pretty. We're sustainable. You know, if you told me that we're going to be in a 10-year recession, I think that outcome is much more catastrophic than if it's, you know, a year, 18 months, or 2 years. So that's the way we generally view it. Our products are kind of a, maybe in the marketplace, a little bit of a tweener product. You know, we're in the 8 to 11-month range on average. And so, you know, in a recession, you know, that maybe aligns with the timing of a recession. So, you know, does that, you know, does that proverbial, you know, egg get through the snake timely and you see the recoveries? I think the answer is you really won't know until you live it. We take the most prudent approach that we can, trying to anticipate it and to you know, be thoughtful in our underwriting process. But small business lending, you know, has got risk. I mean, I think that that's largely why the genre has come to be, because you've had our historic financial institutions that aren't willing to take that level of risk.
Yeah, I think that's always the challenge. There's no free lunch. So with that said, how, if you were anticipating a recession, like how would you underwrite differently? Would you be increasing concentrations of certain types of businesses? Would you stay away from others? How do you think about that trade-off?
Well, I think you might, you know, you're obviously going to get greater concentration in your underwriting from a historic standpoint. How long has the business probably been around? You're going to get maybe greater focus on, you know, what's their revenue stream been like? What's their free cash flow look like? You know, what could they actually sustain? And, you know, there's tables out there under SIC code that would suggest how businesses from an SIC code fared in the 08, 09 recession. You also got SBA statistics on that type of thing. We would probably get more involved in overlaying that, you know, as an aspect of our underwriting. And yeah, you probably have to give greater merit to, you know, what percentage of revenue are you willing to contemplate as a payback model. If and those are all over the map, but if, let's say, today you're funding and you're contemplating, you know, nothing greater than, say, 15% of their revenue source as monies that would be utilized to pay back a funding or a loan, you know, maybe that becomes 10, 12, you know, and you try to mitigate some of it there. So I think you probably, you know, really look at your underwriting at every aspect, and you probably don't have a choice but to tighten some of it at each nugget, at each, you know, data point.
Yeah, well put. And I think those kind of adjustments are never easy and straightforward, but certainly those are tools within your arsenal that you can use if the time comes.
It's certainly not. It's maybe a little bit like, you know, getting your driver's license at a young age and and hoping you're never in an accident, but knowing that there's a strong likelihood that you will be. You really don't know exactly how to prepare for it, so you're probably trying to be prudent about how you drive, but when it occurs, you'll have more experience than before. And, you know, we'll do our best to try to mitigate as much of that risk and, you know, find ourselves surviving with our small businesses on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking ahead, how do you think about the next couple of years? You guys have done pretty well in the last few years, have had pretty good growth. How do you think about what you should do to stay ahead of competition?
That might be the toughest question you've posed so far, because I think that the marketplace, in as much as I don't think we're seeing the tsunami of new funders and new money coming into the game, I still think there is a percolation of that. Sometimes, you know, you either question if they have any underwriting skills, or maybe they're just the smartest person in the room and you're not sure which one it is. So, you know, I think basically, my answer would be, you know, we're going to stick to our knitting. We're going to, you know, continue to try and do what we do and leverage our reputation, leverage our relationships with both our brokers and associate lenders and affiliate companies that maybe, you know, lay traffic off to us that's in a credit box or a credit window that they're not interested in, and continue to do what we do. I mean, I think we're going to continue to try and mitigate aspects of underwriting and data crunching through our IT and our data analytics, and hope to pick up some both efficiencies and you know, likely some small gains in return on our investment there. But I don't think there's a silver lining. I mean, I don't think there's a silver bullet product out there that all of a sudden is going to drive tremendous growth. And I, you know, candidly, growing at a, you know, 20-30% year-over-year clip is, you know, that's a fairly aggressive growth footprint. I mean, early stage companies, you know, you can have these, you know, big percentage swings and grow 300-400%, but growing, you know, exponentially year over year at those kind of clips, I just don't think is sustainable.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That said, you know, you've had a pretty good track record in a very competitive space, and, you know, as they say, ideas are cheap, right? There are certainly a lot of lenders and funders that can come into the market, but the winners are going to be companies and entrepreneurs that can really execute well. And like you said, have a good reputation and have a good process and have good relationships with parties that are important to your value chain. That's certainly probably what matters.
Yeah, no, and we've had, you know, certainly as an industry, you know, we've seen a few folks, you know, take some black eyes. There've been some failures. There've been some, you know, questionable antics inside of some of those companies, at least per the coverage in the press. And, you know, that's a good news, bad news. Okay, it brings a bit of a more aggressive spotlight from the regulatory world. And maybe deservedly so, but it also brings maybe a little bit more rationalization from the credit and capital markets to maybe think through their propositions and maybe slow, you know, some of the funding that maybe sometimes looks a little bit like money without a conscience. So I think that the vast majority of kind of the hyper growth of the, you know, small business lending MCA world is maybe behind us, and, you know, now we're maybe more in a, I don't know, maybe we're in a mid-cycle of, you know, grinding out growth, you know, the old-fashioned way by running good businesses.
Well, at the same time, ultimately, the businesses that need capital, they win when there are more choices. So at least that's a silver lining for
that is a silver lining.
Yes. Well, Vincent, it's been a great conversation, and certainly thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, James. I look forward to meeting you in person.
Terrific. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Take care.